Hello and welcome to another episode of Sniffing the Pages. I'm Nina Manning.
I'm Katie Griffiths.
And in this episode, we'll be discussing the stunning debut novel, The Seven or Eight Deaths of Stella Fortuna by Juliet Grahams, an epic family saga sweeping across generations and stretching back a century and across the Atlantic to early 20th century Italy. We will also be discussing One Summer in Paris by Sarah Morgan, a melt-in-the-mouth summer spectacular packed full of heartache, love and friendship. I will be discussing a brand new psychological thriller, Little Darlings, by Melanie Golding. And Katie will be telling us about her recent reads in What Katie Read Next. We'll also be revealing two more brand new fiction titles, which we'll be reading for the next episode. So, yes, it's been a while. We've been 3 weeks since our last recording.
Yeah, it took us a long time to read The Seven or Eight Deaths of Stella
Fortuna. Yeah, I didn't want to rush it.
Yeah, it's not worth rushing it. It's an amazing book.
And we've been busy mummies looking after
the
cherubs.
Yeah, each of our days slows down my reading.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I think my daughter asked me that today. But why? You haven't done podcasts for ages. Why is that, mummy? I was like, well,
I've been looking after you.
And then on cue, my son went, can I have some banana bread? That is why.
Exactly, that's exactly why.
Times three. All day. Anyway, okay, but we're here now. And we've got some wine.
Yeah, we're here, ready to...
And it's been a lovely summer's weekend. Bank holiday weekend. So raring to go after reading... I read three fantastic books, actually. I've done really well. So we will discuss first, I think, Stella Fortuna.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good one to go with.
The Seven or Eight Deaths of Stella Fortuna.
Is there a summary in here? Yeah, I'll tell you what. I'll read you a little bit at the beginning. When I tell you Stella Fortuna was a special girl, I hope you aren't thinking small town special. Other people will underestimate Stella Fortuna during her long life, and not one of them didn't end up regretting it. Born into rural poverty in a Calabrian village in the early 20th century, Maria Stella Fortuna, known as Stella, grows up inseparable from her sister Tina. Tough, vivacious and fiercely loyal, they support each other through immigration, marriage, children, loss, and the seven or eight near-death experiences Stella suffers throughout her life. But after Stella woke up from the accident, an eighth brush with death, it was Tina who she refused to speak to, and now the sisters have not spoken in 30 years. Can a family historian connect the inexplicable dots in Stella's dramatic story and redeem a battle-scarred and misunderstood woman who has lived out her life with a fire inside her which could not be put out?
When you said to me about the book, you said it was a dense read. And on the final page, I actually ripped it, which I've never done with a book before, on the epilogue. I was just looking through it just to check some final few bits. And I was just holding it and the whole thing just tore out. And I've done a really shoddy job of putting it back together.
Oh, my God.
But it's never happened to me before in my life. It's quite distressing. But, it's quite a thick book,
isn't
it? Well,
it's just a proof copy. It doesn't look that big. But when you pick it up, it's obviously quite densely printed or quite... densely bound.
The pages aren't particularly thick.
Yeah, so it was longer than I thought it was, and it took longer to read than I thought it would, but in a good way, really.
Yeah, it was fantastic. So I will just start trying to remember some of the characters, and then you can tell me which ones I missed out.
You read it more recently than me, so
it starts off with just basic characters, isn't it? So we've got the Fortuna family. So it starts off... it starts off with a mum, doesn't it? Assunta. So in order for us to understand Stella's life, we have to go back to, like any other story, family saga, you have to go back through the generations to understand the parents and the grandparents to realise why people are acting the way they are in the present tense. So the narrator goes back and tells us about Assunta and her life and how she grew up and how she met Stella's father, who was Antonia. And then they go on to have their children. And the first child that they have is Maria Stella. Yeah. But then can we say what happens? Or is that going to spoil the book?
I don't think so, because quite early on, there's quite a big moment that I properly gasped. Mm. I don't know why I found it really surprisingly shocking. So I don't really want to say it because I wouldn't want to ruin that moment for the people.
Okay.
But I guess it's quite
It's quite poignant, actually, throughout the whole novel, yeah, isn't it? And right up until the very end, I suppose.
It's quite relevant, and it's quite, what's the word? Like, formulative.
Mm.
So it's quite an important event in her mum's life, and then also, therefore, in her life.
Yeah.
It's, like, very influential. It has repercussions down through the generations.
Yeah,
which is...
it does. And then it has plays quite a big part in the end of the novel as well, so perhaps
yeah,
best
but basically,
not say
so
that.
Her dad emigrates to Australia, so not to Australia, sorry, to America from Italy.
The shithead,
yeah, his dad is not a nice and then if
but before that he goes off to war, doesn't he? So he has
so,
a little
yeah, sorry,
he has quite
yeah, he
a
goes
few
off to
stints
war
at war
in the First World War. Yeah, he goes into the First World War, and then just before the Second World War he sends for his family. So he's after the First World War he comes back, he emigrates to America, and then just before the Second World War starts he sends his family to move over to America with him, which is
in
a huge
parts
wrench
that
for them.
He comes back,
he's
impregnating Assunta.
Yeah, he literally comes back from war or America, knocks her up and goes away again. Mm. Doesn't send her back any money. He's not the most helpful of husbands.
Mm.
And then eventually sends for them and says, right, you know, let's tear you away from your lives that you have, that you're reasonably happy with, and bring you to a new country where you don't speak the language or know anybody at all.
I know.
Why wouldn't that be fun?
But that life in Italy, that first part of the book, is so beautiful, isn't it? And that, but although there's that hardship sort of 1916 to 1917 when the hunger isn't there.
Yeah,
quite a lot
and
of
they
hunger.
Are very, there's, you know, there's a lot of poverty, and so there's a lot of, and they rely on the land.
Mm.
And I guess with all the men away at war, there's a lot of hard work for the women.
For the
left
women. Yeah, I mean, she was constantly, wasn't she, the mum, my son, to like up and down the mountain to.
Yeah, just
doing jobs. You know, just the general things that we do around the house that we could just, you know, do within
reach. It's a running theme throughout the book, really, isn't it? Like the work that women take on, or the work that women have to take to sort of perform. And it highlights those sorts of things.
Mm.
You know, at a time where men were sort of the strong ones, the women the ones that are left behind, keeping families alive on literally no food and no money.
I think it's fair to say at this point then that Assunta and Antonia's marriage was basically arranged, wasn't it? So they sort of knew each other and
yeah,
they'd
from
seen
adjacent,
each other
from adjoining
a distance.
Villages.
But they'd never had a conversation or a date or anything like that. And then
no,
the next
it was,
thing,
it was
they're
seen
married.
As a good match
yeah.
for both families, so that's why it happened. So there's that
yeah.
strain as well.
So there's those hardship parts throughout the novel where they're boiling chestnuts and eating the broth and feeding the mush to the baby, scraping the powdery substance off the walls to replace flour. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes.
And eating unripe oranges and frying onions in olives or oil, but with no bread. Oh, that's just like...
Yeah, the way that her mum just goes without to feed her kids.
Mm.
Like, she said, if there's anything, she gives it to the kids. She's got nothing left for herself, and it's, it's just, yeah, it's just a testament to... Yeah.
But as the
particularly female strength.
But as the children grow, and then they go off and do their work, don't they? They go off and pick olives and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
it's actually quite beautiful, isn't it? That element of the story where they've got that. It's quite a nice life that they've got, and then you can just taste
yeah,
those ripe olives that they're bringing home for the mum. And
it's that so it's self sufficient, isn't it? They and they're quite, you know, that's where they live, and they look after themselves, and there's that strong sense of community and family. Like they, you know. She's there, Assunta, but she's got her sister and her mum and her in-laws and or some of her in-laws and those people surrounding her, and that's a kind of yeah family, the community around you.
So I think we need to say at this point as well also that the main theme of the book is these 7 or 8 deaths of Stella Fortuna. So these
yeah,
that
so
are woven through the story,
near-death experiences,
yeah.
And each one sort of marks, so the way the books run is each one sort of happens or is marks a sort of stage in her life. So sort of one is her youth, and then one is this emigration, and one is her in motherhood, and these big stages in her life. But yeah, basically she keeps experiencing intense near-death experiences.
Mm.
Some of which are quite, like, brutal.
Yeah, like the pig one.
Yeah.
And then she has to have a skin graft, and you think actually in those days that would have been really like the early 1920s or something like that.
Yeah.
And that was like the
in
first
rural Italy, where there's not like
skin graft operation ever performed or something.
Yeah, so I think, and it, you know, I think it says, oh, she was fortunate because it just happened that the sort of doctor for the region, the doctor isn't even in the same village. They have to like run down the hill with her bleeding out to get to the doctor. And it just was lucky that that doctor happened to have studied or worked with skin graft in the past, because otherwise they just, there's no way she'd survive. So I think a lot of these near-death experiences, it's that she's very lucky, as in lots of those occasions they say, or people are thinking she wouldn't survive that, or she shouldn't have survived that.
Yeah, and then there's their failed attempt to get to America due to the father's incompetence. I think he puts the wrong name or something, doesn't he, on the passport or something? He puts a boy's name or something?
Yeah, he thinks her name would be better if it was more American.
Mm.
So he tries changing her name before on her passport before she's even got there without telling her, and it gets printed wrong, and it's a boy's name, and they can't go because she's obviously not a boy. So his first attempt to move them out to America fails.
I mean, that was just hideous, because that journey alone, just to get from rural Italy to the
port they're going to sail
to the boat, was like
so intense.
A couple of days at least, wasn't it?
And terrifying as well.
And they got robbed by that.
Them out of their comfort zone. Yeah, taken advantage of by a taxi driver who, you know, tells them it's going to cost 20 times more than it really costs. Because he can tell they're from the country and whatever. But I guess at the heart of the book, it's just about, it's a family novel, isn't it? It's an epic family novel, and it's the characters that really draw them in.
They eventually get to America, don't they?
Yeah.
And then that's where it all sort of spans out then, character-wise, because that's when all their suitors arrive, so their siblings.
Yeah, and they have a lot of kids, because I guess they're from a Catholic background, so there's a lot of them. And I say every time he comes back and impregnates his wife again, there's another child.
Does she have more in America? I can't remember. She has five altogether, doesn't she?
Yeah, five altogether, and then as the book goes on, lots of them get married and have kids as well, so they're sort of, the cast does expand.
It's huge, isn't it? But I've definitely found it easy to grasp.
Yeah, at no point was I thinking...
I think because you know them.
I think because they're introduced gradually as well, so it's not like, here's this cast of like 18 people, please keep track of them.
Yeah.
They're brought in one by one, and it makes sense, you sort of know who they are, because you discover them along the way and get to know them, so I don't think at any point I was going, who's that?
Yeah.
Which sometimes I know with books with very big casts of people, you are like, hang on, let me flick back.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's that guy? What does he say?
It's like this, like the history novels, isn't it? When they've got the maps at the beginning, the map
family
of the
tree
family,
at the beginning,
family tree.
Yeah. My mother-in-law loves those. Her favourite thing is a book with a family tree at the beginning. I don't know why.
Yeah, so really when she goes to America, that is the time when Stella changes, because up until then she's got this very specific idea, hasn't she, of how she wants to live her life. And I think the things that happen to her when she's in Italy, there's two incidents that happen to her. Something that she witnesses.
Yeah.
And then something that is inflicted upon her.
Yeah.
And these two incidents put her off close, intimate relationships and also wanting to give birth.
Yeah, so she has a lot of trauma that's come from experiences in her childhood, and that obviously plays out into her adulthood and her adult relationships. And it's really, at times, it's really hard to read. It's really painful because it's painful to see someone in that amount of distress and to just want everyone around her to understand. Like, I wanted her to explain it to someone or someone to notice and like just get some therapy. Or something, because it's hard. It's hard to read, because you can see where it's going. It's not going anywhere. You can see it's going nowhere good, because she's got these huge hang-ups and this huge emotional trauma. And she's not able to... She's not telling anyone around her about it. So they're trying to make her do... They're trying to force her down this path that she is absolutely terrified by. And because nobody's talking about any of it, it just happens. It's like watching a slow-motion car crash. And at times it is. It's really painful and brutal to read. And you really feel for her. I think that's what you said to me when you texted me saying it was finished, saying your heart hurt. How I felt by the end of it as well.
Yeah.
In a good way, really, but...
Yeah, it was,
at
I
parts,
felt bereft.
It was sad. In times it was sad, and at times it was, really life-affirming, but it's a really emotional book.
So it's fair to say that in the book there is some physical and psychological abuse, but it's not one of these books like... Can I give an example of something? What's that big fat book down there that's about
A Little Life?
A Little Life, yeah. We're not talking...
I know which one you're talking
Yeah.
About. It's not as...
It's not a little life.
It's not a little life. It doesn't dwell on it. It doesn't really... It's not a huge... I guess it's a plot point, but it's not a... It's not spend a lot of time writing about what happens or the detail of it.
In fact,
the actual bits of it are quite brief.
Yeah, I mean, the act of physical violence was actually just crept up on me very quickly and then was gone.
Yeah, that bit's very brief. I don't think the bit I found distressing to read more than the physical violence was just the sort of watching it all inevitably come about and thinking, I can see where this is going. And it's so painful to see.
Because she had such an idea in her mind of what she wanted to be. Not necessarily exactly where she wanted to be, but she knew that she didn't want to go down the same route as her mum. She wanted some independence and some freedom.
And what's so heartbreaking is that she's come to America, which is this place where, in theory, she should be able to go and achieve those sorts of dreams. And it was hard in some ways to read because, if she was living in America now and she was white and reasonably affluent, I guess, she'd be able to sort of go and live independently. There isn't quite the same... expectation that you have to be married, particularly with her Catholic background. Like, she has to be married, she has to have children, this is just the way her life is going to go, that's what her value is as a woman. And it's poignant because I guess you think of her, in if she was placed into a different time, a more modern time, what could she have made of her life? Someone as, you know, fierce and feisty and intelligent and incredible as she is, being kind of stifled by her family's or society's expectations of her.
Hmm. It could have literally just taken... I think there was one point, there was a woman upstairs, she wanted to know, the lady who was lodging in the house that they were in, she wanted to know how she was managing to do it. And if she could just have had that mentor from somebody just outside of the family. And it's that
sliding
doors.
She tries to run away at some point, I think, doesn't she? And it's like, if she'd managed to do that, what could she have made of herself? And it's those sort of missed opportunities that are so like poignant and heartbreaking. And she is, it's not depressing, the book, it's not sad all the way through, it's like I'm making it sound a bit
not at
downbeat,
all.
But it's not. It's
because
just...
she's such an amazing character and
yeah, and because
so
she finds
for what
ways
she actually
to keep
achieves.
Going throughout all these different things that have happened to her.
So she doesn't fall in love with her husband initially, does she? I mean, I don't think she ever really, really, truly loved him.
No, but so that's also a bit of an arranged marriage, isn't it? Which I think is that kind of, again, that...
So
family tradition,
so like literally forced down her throat.
Yeah, family arranges. Yeah, forced marriage, maybe slightly more than arranged, but basically it's not like boy meets girl, fall in love.
I mean, she told him enough times, didn't she?
Yeah, I'm never going to marry you.
Yeah.
So,
but she had to marry him in the end. But I think there was a couple of points in the book where she became comfortable with him, and he actually was a bloody hard worker in the end.
Yeah, and
the jobs that he was doing right up until the end, wasn't he? Like, doing three jobs.
Working really hard, yeah. One of the difficult things about the book is that I really liked her husband. And I think it sort of says that in the book. You know, he's not the villain.
In the end.
But how, like, the way their relationship...
I didn't like him.
Yeah, but then I sort of feel like he's... Not that he was forced to do that. You know, no one's ever forced to behave like that, but...
I guess he just didn't understand.
She had never told him what the problem was. He was, you know, he's got... There are pressures on him as well. He has to be a man, he's to provide for his family. He's that kind of, I just feel like both of them were clashing, and it was hard because I actually instinctively quite liked him as a character, whilst also not at all liking the way he was behaving. I've had some sympathy for him, I guess. Sympathy for his also being constrained by a role he didn't necessarily want to play or fulfill.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as you say, he was, you know, he worked incredibly hard. He clearly loved his family and worked.
And I think if she'd have been able to open up to him, I think he would have understood.
I think that's what was so hard, actually. I felt if she just said to him, look, this is why this is what the issue is, this is why I don't want to marry you, or this is why I can't have a relationship with you in the way that you want, he probably would have been really understanding and said, we'll find a way to work it through together. Mm. But she didn't feel able to do that, partly because of her own past, and I guess partly because it's something that's not easy to admit to.
No,
and that's what sort of was heartbreaking about it.
Not the sort of family that she came from where they would be able to open up and talk about their feelings.
No, not a background where it's all, let's all open up and talk about the hard things they've experienced in their life.
But then she goes on to have so many children, it's unreal.
Yeah, well, I guess that's a sort of Catholic thing, isn't it?
Twice as many as her own mum.
Well, I suppose her husband was around a lot more than her mum's husband was.
Yeah, I suppose.
But yeah, she does have a lot of children.
And she, and I wouldn't say she started quite late, but I would imagine for that era, she was about 27, wasn't she, by the time she got married?
Yeah, so we've had that many children, it's quite, obviously, as someone that's, you know, she got two children, you've got three children. Imagine having like 8 or 9 or 10. Yeah.
She was 44 by the time she had the last one.
That's a lot of kids to look after. Yeah, I think it's, I mean, one of the last things that's, I suppose, important to know is that she is like her eighth like near-death experience results in her having to have a, and this is clear right from the beginning, I think it mentions it, but she has to have a frontal lobotomy. So she's suddenly very disinhibited and she forgets a lot of her previous life, so she forgets a lot of things. And so she has this accident, she wakes up having had this lobotomy which saved her life, and suddenly she won't speak to her sister Tina. She's furious with her. Their relationship's really strong, they've been really important to each other throughout the whole book. And she wakes up and won't speak to her at all, never speaks to her again. And I guess it's part of the story is untangling why that happened, like what in her head.
Yeah.
You know, obviously her brain was changed by the lobotomy, but what was it that she remembered, or what was it that she imagined in the back of her head?
Yeah, it doesn't really answer it. It's two perspectives at the end, isn't it? Which I quite
like. Yeah, I think it's not, well, and that's also, it's not clear cut, is it? Because you're never going to know with something like that what actually is the cause.
Yeah. And yeah, and those final words actually in the last chapter were really moving, weren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was an amazing book. I felt it was really, the whole thing's really moving and it ends really beautifully. And I just really loved it.
Yeah, I loved it.
I'm really
glad
to get the opportunity to read it, because I'm not sure I'd have come across it otherwise.
Yeah, she survived it, didn't she? Bless her.
Yeah, I guess that's it. 100. It's a sort of story of survival and... Oh.
There's a child coughing.
We've got baby monitor noise.
We've got a cougher. He's a bit poorly tonight, so he might be the third party in the podcast this evening.
That could be a brilliant podcast partner. I'd love to have that chat.
It could be a bit sort of like, well, and then wouldn't really what he's talking about. He's high on Calpol.
He's high on Calpol. What's your favourite book?
The Very Hungry Caterpillar.
Classic.
So yeah, it's brilliant. It's out by, this is 7 or 8 Deaths of Stella Fortuna, Juliet Graham's, out on the 7th of May.
Yep, so quite soon. And yeah, I think I gave it 5 stars, if that's of interest to anyone.
Yeah, definitely a 5-star book.
And yeah, well worth a read.
Yeah, bloody brilliant. So the next book we read was One Summer in Paris by Sarah Morgan.
Yeah. This is a lovely book. That's One Summer in Paris, very summery read.
So Grace is the main character and she has plans to surprise David with a month-long trip to Paris.
For their anniversary, yeah.
That's right, yeah. And actually, she's based in Connecticut, isn't she? Which I didn't get at
all. Yeah, it took me ages to realise she was American. Should I read the back of this?
Yeah, read the blurb. Sort of
gives us a summary. Grace can't believe it when her husband announces he doesn't want to join her on her 25th wedding anniversary trip to Paris. Instead, he wants a divorce. Reeling from the shock, she finds herself in the most romantic city in the world, alone. Audrey leaves behind heartache of her own when she arrives in Paris. A job in a bookshop is her ticket to freedom, but with no money and speaking no French, her summer adventure seems doomed to fail. Until she meets Grace and everything changes. Living in neighbouring apartments above the bookshop, Audrey and Grace form an unlikely friendship. They came to Paris to find themselves, but finding each other might be the best thing that's ever happened to them.
I mean, it's the perfect book for readers, for lovers of books anyway, isn't it? A book about a bookshop is always...
always good when there's a bookshop involved.
It's always a good one in my book.
So at the beginning she's surprising her husband with his trip, and then he's...
And then that's when he drops it on her that he is... not going to be coming on the trip because he wants a divorce and he's been having an affair, and the person he's been having an affair with, he's in love with her. And then also Grace's
she's her,
daughter,
like, baby
Sophie.
Sister or something.
Oh, God, yeah, something ridiculous. She's like half his age or something.
Or some kind like that, yeah.
And then her daughter Sophie is just about to leave for university. So basically, her whole world is just tumbling down around her.
And she goes to Paris anyway.
Yeah, and then she meets Audrey.
Yeah.
Can you remember about Audrey? I can't remember. I know
one
she had
things
red hair.
About, so Audrey is... Sorry, I'll say that in a second. Audrey is young. She's, like, I think about 16, so she's just finished her GCSEs.
I think she's the same age as Sophie, isn't she? 17
Yeah, so she's just finishing school. She's she's quite dyslexic, so she's not doing very, she finds schoolwork really hard, she's not doing very well at school, and her mum's an alcoholic, so she's been looking after herself for years, and she's been hiding this fact from everybody else in her life, so nobody, her friends don't know, her teachers don't know, nobody knows that her mum's an alcoholic, and her plan is to, she's been saving up money from her job in a hairdresser so that she can go to Paris for a summer and get away from this sort of responsibility that she's had to take on, looking after her mum and keeping all these secrets. So she does what is a very brave and slightly stupid thing and goes to Paris, even though she doesn't speak any French. Gets a job in a bookshop, even though she can't really read.
It's amazing how she
and it's incredible. Like, I loved her as a character. I thought she was brilliant. She's so resilient. She's so so incredible. And actually, I think the best thing about this book for me was their relationship, like the friendship. And it's funny, it's a bit interesting because obviously Grace is a completely different stage of her life to Audrey. She's like in her 40s, she's been married 25 years, her daughter's growing up and moving away. And I guess Audrey's very young, and this real sort of friendship springs up between the two of them. And it's a really interesting like female friendship to read about.
Yeah.
That age difference, yeah. And very different perspectives on life, and she's kind of coming from this, yeah, she's been this American mum, and Audrey's been this very self-sufficient teenager. And what they bring to each other and how they help each other.
They have a little bit of... they have a few things in common anyway, don't they? Which they find out later on down the line.
And I like that they both help each other. So it would be really easy to imagine that Grace goes and helps Audrey in all these different ways because she's almost like a sort of surrogate mother figure. But actually it's not like that because Audrey does as much for Grace as Grace does for her. And it's an honest friendship in that sense that they're very open with each other and they each bring something to the table. And I really enjoyed that sort of strong central relationship.
Yeah, because initially I thought Grace was a lot older than she was.
Yeah.
Because she dresses quite dowdily, doesn't she? And then...
Yeah.
Is that a word? Dowdily? Dowdy?
And then you find out some things throughout the book about her sort of her family history that maybe explain some of the ways that she is.
Yeah.
Where she's very... So she's extremely organised. She needs everything to be done a certain way. She likes very much to be in control of everything. And that's her husband's sort of excuse for banging the babysitter. Is that he feels that she doesn't need him because she runs their whole life herself and she does everything for him. But ultimately, he's just having a bit of a midlife crisis.
Yeah.
which
he rapidly comes to regret.
Yes.
Regret? Sorry, that's the wine. Regret. I've lost the use of my R's.
Half a bottle, half a glass, God. Unless you start drinking before I got here, in which case. But yeah, I really liked it, I'd say.
Yeah, it made me want to go to Paris and spend a month eating warm croissants because they ate a lot of warm croissants.
They did eat a lot of warm croissants on tables outside, and that's always delicious food.
Oh my gosh, didn't she like just get out like platters of cheese? I think she went to the market once and got some delicious cheese and bread. And it was
the descriptions of the food were really made me hungry.
Really mouth-watering, wasn't it? Yeah. So yeah, it really... transported me to the streets of Paris and I wanted to go and live there for a month and work in a bookshop and eat cheese.
Yeah, I'm not
going to
do that, basically. Without the whole husband wanting a divorce bit.
Yeah.
If we could just do that.
Yeah. And there's a few other little characters in there. Was Etienne, the
Yeah, so there's all the love interest worker. for Audrey, and there's a kind of a character from Grace's past who comes back. And also her grandmother's in it as well. Her grandmother... I don't know if grew up in Paris or just came lived
Didn't
in Paris.
Didn't she work
for a
in the bookshop, or she used to visit the bookshop?
Yeah,
when she was younger.
Spent a lot of time in Paris when she was younger, and her grandmother's a real character.
Mimi, is that her name?
Yeah, Mimi, and she's very, I guess, a bit flamboyant, and she's very forthright in her opinions, and I really liked her as a character as well.
Yeah, she was the one that raised Grace, wasn't she? Essentially.
Yeah, I think that's a very sort of more like her mum than her grandmother.
Yeah. Yes, I loved it.
Yeah, like I say, it was really interesting. It wasn't quite what I expected. I thought it was going to be a more straightforward romance, and it was actually more of a book on female friendship than it was anything else, and it was really refreshing to read that. I really enjoyed
it. Sisterhood.
Yeah.
It's already published. It's out. I've seen it out in the world already quite a few times.
Yes, I saw it in the supermarket the other day.
Yeah. Published
by... So you can buy that one.
HQ Stories, One Summer in Paris by Sarah Morgan.
Yeah.
Lovely. This week, my psychological thriller recommendation is Little Darlings by Melanie Golding. It's a brilliantly fast-paced story about Lauren, a young mother who has just given birth to twin boys. Lauren is visibly struggling from the outset,
And any mother who has just given birth to their own children will relate to this, as Melanie, the author, has captured the essence of new motherhood perfectly. Her attention to detail, from Lauren's postnatal erratic thoughts to trying to navigate two babies from the front door to the car, complete with twin travel buggy system, is shockingly accurate. Her relationship with her new mum friends, who seem to have it all together, and her husband, who returns back to work too soon and for too many hours, gives you a sharp shove back to the desperately dark days of early motherhood. But what makes this book special is the eerie subplot. The author, Melanie, has a fascination with folklore and the Grimm brother fairy tales, and she's cleverly woven this into the novel, creating a suspenseful and often creepy element to the story. Little Darlings is a compulsive read, highlighting the psychological strains of new motherhood. It's written with real beauty and it had me on tenterhooks throughout. That's Little Darlings by Melanie Golding, out in hardback, ebook, and audio on the 2nd of May. And now on to the section, what Katie read next.
Yes.
What did you read next?
Well, so I'll talk quickly about this book, and then, so this is Queen of the North, which is by Anne O'Brien, and it's a historical fiction novel. And Anne O'Brien's written quite a few historical fiction novels, and most of her books are about the forgotten women, about sort of forgotten women of history. So they're wives of great men, or similar things to that, where their stories haven't necessarily been told. And I really enjoy those stories because they're kind of the so yeah, the bits of history we don't really hear about in history lessons. So this particular book is about Elizabeth Mortimer, and it's set in, well, it starts in 1399, which is a meaningless date to a lot of people.
Such a ridiculously long time ago, isn't it?
So yeah, so it's King Richard II, and then it's King Henry the, I want to say, 4th, but I'm not certain about that.
It's okay.
So that's fine. So this basically, it's a kind of matter of succession. She believes her nephew would be the right person to be king, but her nephew's only 9, so
yeah,
this whole sort of political manoeuvring. And it's an interesting insight into, I guess, women of the time, because when you read history or when you hear history about of those periods, it's always about the kings and the knights and the barons and all these really important men, and the women are often very much relegated to had babies in the background. But of course not all women were satisfied with that, so it's this sort of understanding of what power women did actually have. And this is someone who's very, so Elizabeth Mortimer's like the very powerful bloodline, so she's descended from important royal people, and I guess the sort of power that gives her within her marriage and within the country. And yeah, it's an interesting book. So her, I found her not always the most likeable character. I think her sort of ambition made her a bit difficult to get on board with at times, but it was an interesting insight. If you're into historical fiction, that would be a good read.
Good. So that's already out.
So it was out 18th of April, so last week, I guess that's it.
Queen of the North, Anne O'Brien. She's written quite a few, hasn't she?
She has written quite a few, yeah. But this is the first of hers I've read, and I did enjoy it. And then the other thing I was going to talk about, so this last year, actually, for my birthday last year, I was lucky enough to be given by my husband a reading spa experience.
So not this year?
No, it wasn't this year. It was last year. It's taken us a year and 3 months to get around to booking and finally getting a night away to go and manage this. So it's a bookshop in Bath called Mr. B's Reading Emporium or something like that. And they run these things called reading spas. And basically,
it just sounds amazing.
It is so good. You basically go and you send sort of a list of the kind of books that you like or the kind of thing you're looking for, and they match you up with them, with one of their staff, and that person comes to talk to you, and they give you a cup of tea and a piece of cake, and they just chat to you about what books you like, and the time properly flew. So I think you're allocated like 90 minutes, but I was in there a whole 2 hours.
Wow.
Just chatting. So you talk about books that you've liked or what you're looking for, and then they ask you questions about what you like in a book or what you look for in a book. So I guess I had to think beforehand about what sort of thing I wanted to get out of it.
Yeah, just that alone, that aspect of just sitting there, talking to somebody about books.
Yeah, and so for you 90 sort of say, so they used to have this big like recommendation wall, and they get you to say which books of it you've read and if you liked them and what you liked about them and what you didn't like about them, so that they can go, and the idea is that they'll go and recommend you some books that you've never heard of before, by authors you've never heard of before, so you come away with something new. And I came away with 8 books, but the pile of books she recommended to me was, it was more than double that.
Yeah, I saw your
pitch. It was a huge pile of books. And I would happily have read all of them. They all sounded amazing.
Yeah, I think you had in your other pile that you didn't bring home the reader on six, on the 6-12 or something, which is an amazing book. You just need to borrow it at some point.
Yeah, so
when your stack's gone down.
Yeah, my stack's gone down. So as part of the experience, you get a certain amount of money. I can't remember exactly what it is. It's about £50, I think, which is you then get to spend on books that you read that are recommended to you.
Right,
choose
so
to get.
So the voucher or the experience includes how many books?
Well, it depends how much they are. But it's I got 8. But I went over. So maybe
so
it's more
you
like
get
6?
8 books to
well,
take
it's more
home
like,
as part of your
it's probably more like 6
experience.
If you've got the self-restraint to not overspend.
So you went over a
couple. But I went over a little bit. Just a little. Well, I've done this once before a few years ago. And that time I came home with 9 books. And this time my husband was like, oh. After pause.
He's just telling you bought too many books.
Huxley, don't judge me. My husband was like, you can't have as many as 9 this time. So I went, wait. Which is slightly better. So I've read already one of the books I was recommending. Well, 2 actually, but I was going to talk about one of them. Read already one of the books that they was recommended to me, which is called A Long Way to a Small Angry Planet by Becky Chambers.
Wow.
This is a sci-fi
love
novel.
Titles with cool titles like that.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. And it's a sci-fi novel, which isn't a genre I would never normally pick up. But they ask you sort of all these things, and she said to me, oh, are you averse to sci-fi? I said, no, I've never really got into it or tried it, really. But I'm open to reading books from all genres, really. And it was an amazing book. I absolutely loved it. So it's one of the things I said when we were chatting about it is that characters are really important to me in a book, and I would rather a book, if I had to sacrifice one, I'd sacrifice plot over character. And so this, I think I said something like the kind of book I wanted was with the kind of characters that you fall in love with, and where you get to the end and you think, I would just read these characters living their everyday lives. Like, I don't even care about them having an adventure or any storyline. I just want to spend more time with them. And this is that totally that kind of book. Like, I just fell in love with them right from the beginning.
So how old is the book? Is it fairly new?
I actually have no idea. I think it's recent, in the last few years maybe. There's definitely at least a second one out now, maybe a third. So it must be a little way back. I think she's written quite a few. And this one might have been written quite early on in her career. And it's a really interesting book. It sort of challenges some questions in it that challenge, like, I don't want to say our sense of humanity, because actually it's not just humans, because it's this big wide alien universe. So I guess the sort of values of sentient life and, you know, where you draw those lines. But and you know, bad things do happen and people in it are awful, or there's still injustice in the universe. But basically, it's a really feel good book. But yeah, the characters are the main thing about it. You just want to spend more time in their world. They're all so engaging and so interesting and so diverse. I guess if you write a book in a sort of sci-fi universe, you can cast aside any restrictions in terms of your characters. So that this diversity, not just within humanity, but across this whole field of different aliens. And it's really cleverly done, because she gives a lot of time to sort of developing like the different societies and politics of different alien races and how those kind of... what happens when they clash or meet together. So yeah, it's a really good book.
It's so fantastic that they're able to do... I mean, I suppose they sit there and have a good long chat with you for those 90 minutes or 2 hours in your case. But to be able to, you know, change your perspective and give you... different books to read that you wouldn't normally perhaps pick up in
a
bookshop.
Yeah, this is a completely different genre that I've never really tried before, that I've absolutely loved. I'm definitely going to read some more work by this author before. As I said, I've still got 6 more books to read that they recommended to me, and I'm really excited about all of them. So, and it's so nice. So actually, I think I ended up with 2 people recommending me books, because everyone just got really excited about chatting. So we ended up with just 3 of us sitting there with a pile of books, just enthusing about books. And there's something so lovely about having people recommend books that they love to you.
Yeah.
So they're just sitting there and saying, this book is amazing, you've got to read it, this is why, or you'll love it. And it's so fun to have that kind of real note.
But what an amazing job.
Yeah, if I lived anywhere near Bath, it would be my life's ambition to work there. Like, I was talking to Carol on the way back, I was like, I'm trying to work out if I could commute to Bath from Dorset, because it would be the perfect job. I'd love that. It's a bit far, sadly. I might not quite make the school run.
Fantastic concept. I've never heard of it before until you've told me about it. And I wonder if now if there are other places around the country.
I've never heard of anywhere else doing it, no. But I don't know that there aren't. I've never heard of anywhere else. But I think
we'll be Googling it straight after.
When we met the first time, Gareth, my husband, ended up talking to Mr. B himself. And I think he sort of said, you know...
Mr. B, is he like the Great Oz?
Yeah. Does
he hide character? Come behind a curtain.
I mean, to be honest with you, even if you don't go for the reading spot, if you're ever in Bath, it's an absolutely gorgeous bookshop anyway. And they also do book subscription service, so you can... they'll send you like a book a month for a year.
Mm.
Based on a similar thing where you talk about the sort of things that you like and don't like, and they'll try and get you new and different things. But it's a lovely bookshop anyway. But I think there was a conversation... Gareth talked to him about it and said it's quite hard for independent bookshops to make a living these days. Mm. Obviously, you've got Amazon and, you know, you can buy books so cheap in the supermarkets. There's just this mass market stuff. They were finding that it was a struggle. And
so that's why they introduced this concept. Yeah,
this is a very different concept, but it really, it's, you know, it's very busy. I think it was months in advance it's booked up.
Really?
They don't do it on the weekends as well because it's upstairs in a room, but it's still part of the bookshop, so I guess they want it to be not completely crammed with other people or it wouldn't be the same experience. But yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. So if you've got a book lover in your life you want to buy a present for, or you are a book lover and you want someone to buy you a present,
yeah,
or just a present for yourself.
I'm just going to keep dropping as many hints as I can.
Shall I email all the details to Chris?
Yeah, could you?
Just drop him a stealthy message. Pop that over. Yeah, it's a really amazing experience. I absolutely loved it.
Well done. Really jealous.
Yeah, so I'll report back on those books as I read them.
Yeah, got a big old stack to get through.
I'm rationing myself.
Are you?
I've got other things to... Well, I've already got an existing to be read pile before.
Yeah.
I already got all those.
And then the podcast pile as well.
Yeah, so I'm limiting myself to one a week of those, of the new ones, just so I don't do nothing but read them.
Yeah.
Just slam through them all in a couple of weeks.
Brilliant. So, for the next episode, Katie and I will be reading Tiger by Polly Clark.
And We Are Not Okay by Natalia Gomez.
Very nice pronunciation.
Well, we are just assuming I've got that right. it does actually say young adult novel.
Oh, is it? Okay, young adult novel. So yeah. That's good. That'll be our first young adult novel.
It will. Yes, it will. So that'll be nice.
Brilliant. Okay, thanks for joining us. And tune in next time for another episode of Sniffing the Pages. Bye.
Bye.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.